I am Ed Renner. Welcome to my podcast, Forums for a Future. Forums for a Future is based on a university honors course I taught at the University of South Florida in 2007-2008. Three textbooks provide background reading for the individual episodes. They are Thomas Friedman's The World is Flat, Jared Diamond's Collapse, How Societies Choose to Fail or Succeed, and Gwen Dyer's Future Tense, The Coming World Order. The syllabus for the podcast series, text copies of all of the individual podcasts, and directions for subscribing to the series, either directly or through iTunes, are available on my website at kerenner.com. That is www.kerenner.com. The first 16 episodes are in audio format. They provide an academic, conceptual foundation for the series. After having taken nearly a one-year break to teach Forums for the Future, I am now ready to continue the series, but this time in both audio and video formats. As a way to get started on the continuation, I have created a three-part transition. Episodes 17, 18, and 19 provide a brief introduction of the conceptual foundation for those new to the series, and a quick review for the original subscribers. Starting with podcast number 20, the continuation of the podcast is an open-ended series of positive approaches for addressing the many specific, contemporary, economic, social, and political issues that challenge our capacity for making the changes necessary for having a future in the 21st century. In today's podcast, number 20 in the series, I will ask 5 rhetorical questions. If you answer the questions the way most people do, you should be in favor of the United States adopting a universal health care system. The first question concerns national health.
If a country could spend $100,000 and extend the life expectancy of 10,000 people, or spend $100,000 to extend the life expectancy of one person, what decision should be made?
Usually, national health decisions are to spend national health money to increase the general level of health. Typically, every additional increment of improvement in the national level of health costs an increasingly larger amount of money. This is because initial expenses on health are for preventive measures that are inexpensive but have a large impact, such as safe drinking water and inoculations for infectious diseases. Whereas the more medically intrusive interventions, such as heart surgery, require large expenses to gain increase in life expectancy for a limited number of people. In short, increasingly larger amounts of per capita expense purchase progressively smaller increases in the overall level of national health. An index that measures the level of health of a nation is a quantitative statistic. It is not a subjective concept. There are a variety of closely related statistics that are used to assess a national level of health. Two common, simple statistics are average life expectancy and infant mortality rate. There are other indirect measures, such as the average height, which reflects how well a society cares for the health and the nutrition of its citizens, and it is a simple statistic to obtain. Health researchers and the World Health Organization of the United Nations have developed more complex statistics based on a combination of measurable factors. These statistics permit a comparison between nations. One purpose of such comparisons is to identify those aspects of health systems that best promote health in order to help countries develop better national health policies. Like so many social issues, how to achieve higher levels of health is not a mystery. The sciences of the modern era have served us well in terms of providing the information necessary to enable us to choose our own social conditions. The future need not be uncontrollable and therefore unknowable. The various levels of health statistics yield similar results. By most common measures, the United States compares very poorly to the other industrialized nations of the world. We have lower life expectancy, higher infant mortality rates, our country has declined in relative height, we are last among the 19 leading industrialized nations in preventable deaths, and we're 37th among the 191 nations of the world included in the study by the United Nations. Obviously, poorer countries have a limit on what they can spend, and thus they have lower levels of health. However, the relatively low level of health in the United States is not due to lack of per capita expense. The United States spends significantly more on health care than any other nation in the world. That's 15% of our gross domestic product, or about $6,000 per person per year. This is roughly twice as much per capita as other industrialized countries. Clearly, not all health systems are equal. For example, Canada spends about half and has universal health coverage for all citizens, while 50 million Americans are without health coverage. Thus, the implicit principle in answer to the first question is that every additional dollar of expense should purchase progressively smaller amounts of national health. In practice, this means that the first money spent should buy universal basic health, and additional money should buy the more specialized individual health care. It is not just an issue of how much per capita is spent, but also how that money is allocated. The second question concerns allocating the level of health care.
What would you choose if you could either A, save enough money to be 100% certain you could pay for a major medical emergency that had a 1% chance of occurring, but no money for owning your own home or for your children's education, or B, own a home and provide for your children's education, but have no capacity to cover a major medical emergency that had a 1% chance of occurring?
The large majority of us in the United States are in this exact situation. Most of us take our chances that we will not be one of the 1 in 100 confronted with a medical emergency, and we choose instead to satisfy other important personal aspirations. Only the very rich do not have to make this subjective choice. The choice, however, is not one that anyone should be expected to have to make. Yet, in a healthcare system such as exists in the United States, where meeting healthcare needs is primarily an individual responsibility, that is the situation all but a few are in, of having the possibility of important satisfactions of life wiped out completely by an unforeseen health issue. These are exactly the situations for which insurance is intended to protect us. as noted by Paul Krugman and Robin Wells in their essay in the New York Review of Books.
Most advanced countries have dealt with the defects of private health insurance in a straightforward way by making health insurance a government service.
The third question is about allocating the per capita costs.
If you could put 1% of your disposable income into a pool to have a 100% certainty of the capacity to meet any medical emergency, would you choose to do so?
Obviously, if everyone put into a common pool 1/100th of the amount of money needed to provide the 1 in 100 chance of a medical emergency, then everyone could have the rest of their disposable income for other alternatives. As the richest nation in the world, the United States can afford, through general tax revenue, to contribute this relatively small per-person payment that would cover the cost of universal health care. Currently, only a few people have the personal resources to pay for the progressively more expensive treatments. However, once a group of people pool their money to spread the risk, everyone is better off. In the United States, there are nearly 25 million households that have a combined income of less than $30,000. For this group of people, many are without any form of health coverage. Yet, when any medical emergency arises, they are either forced to forego treatment or other essential needs in order to pay the bill, or else to use emergency room services that are an extremely inefficient way to provide basic health care, for which the rest of the country must pick up the tab anyway. These huge inequalities in access to health care add enormous indirect costs to the economy in lost wages, preventable illness, human suffering, and inefficient use of health services that would be far better directed towards supporting universal health insurance. The existence of a national health insurance program is completely compatible with our capitalist economy and our democratic form of government. First, the level of basic health care provided by a national health insurance plan is determined by the population through a political consensus of how much tax revenue people are willing to pay to provide everyone with a guaranteed absolute level of health. This is simply a democratically determined universal national entitlement. In contrast, our current level of health care is largely determined by private insurers and health providers who are primarily charged with returning profits to their corporate investors. And second, it is the most efficient way to get the most health for the amount of money spent. These are the reasons why all of the other major industrialized democracies of the world have a higher level of health than exists in the United States. The fourth question is about the level of health per unit cost.
Would you prefer a health care system that gave you better health for less money, or one that gave you less health for more money?
The deteriorating level of health care is not just a problem for the uninsured, but increasingly for those covered by our privately funded insurance system, as dramatically illustrated in the Academy Award-winning documentary Sicko by Michael Moore.
Oh boy. This I do early in the morning. First thing I do is I clean here.
At age 79, Frank Cardeal should be kicking back on a beach somewhere. But even though he's insured by Medicare, it doesn't cover all the costs of the drugs that he and his wife need.
Being that I'm an employee here, My medicine is for free, so that's why I gotta keep working. Until I die. There's nothing wrong with that. If there are golden years, I can't find them. I'll tell you that.
The past decade, a nonpartisan health policy research organization funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has tracked access to health care in the United States. The study provides the most up-to-date snapshot of access problems Americans face when seeking medical care. The study concluded,
"It is not a pretty picture, especially for insured people who increasingly are finding that the access to care once guaranteed by insurance is declining. The 59 million people reporting access problems increasingly cited cost as an obstacle to needed care, along with the rising rates of health plans and health systems barriers."
Not only is the present U.S. healthcare system getting progressively worse, it performs poorly in comparison with the systems in place in the rest of the industrialized world. What accounts for the comparative lack of health per unit of cost in a country that prides itself on market-driven efficiency? One purpose of the report by the World Health Organization that ranked the United States 37th, but by far the most expensive in the world, was to compare national health care systems to provide data which could be used to inform public policy. The answers that they found are not very complicated. It is feasible to greatly increase health level per unit cost. Consider two of the larger contributors. The first is single payer. The United States healthcare system is fragmented. The delivery of care and insurance is administered by an array of government entitlements, private insurers, for-profit hospitals and HMOs and others who add cost without adding value. A single payer system in which the government directly provides the insurance is not only far cheaper, but it also provides the mechanisms for integrating the disparate, uncoordinated parts of current health care management. In the United States, administrative costs and profits account for roughly 30% of all health care costs. This is in contrast to 1-3% administrative costs for national plans, such as operate in Canada and for Medicare in the United States. Most advanced countries have dealt with the defects of private health insurance in a straightforward way, by making health insurance a government service. The second is specialization. For providing basic health care, the biggest need is for primary care physicians, the supply of which in the United States has dwindled to about 10% of medical students. The others choose far more profitable specializations that pay 300% more than primary care. In other countries, the differential for being a specialist is about 30% more than a primary care physician. As a result, there are far more doctors to provide the basic health service that contribute the most to the level of national health at far less cost. A single payer system provides the capacity to set national levels of financial incentives to ensure a completely sufficient supply of trained medical personnel and a differential amount of pay for higher skill levels and specializations that distribute then medical supply in accordance with the need through simple supply and demand economics, but without artificially inflating the costs through unnecessary over-specialization or by limiting individual career choices by individual doctors. There are other large issues that have been clearly identified, such as overtreatment and unnecessary treatments in our current system, as well as smaller factors, such as the medical liability insurance costs of doctors, which have been overemphasized as an excuse for avoiding a critical examination of the fundamental foundation of the current private system. The issue is not one of lack of information about what to do to bring about significant improvement. There are simple, feasible solutions to provide adequate universal health care. The difficulty is the willingness to accept these alternatives, which require a shift in how we think about the concept of health care, not about small changes to the details of the current system, even though reforms of issues like medical liability and other areas would help. So the final question is about the concept of health.
Is access to affordable basic health care for all children and adults the responsibility of the nation or of every parent and every individual?
Our unwillingness to change the fundamental nature of our health system means we need to examine our personal constructs to see if they make rational sense about how we think about health. The level of health index is a measure of a nation's vitality. It is a measure of the capacity of a nation to deliver equality of opportunity to all its citizens to pursue their life free from preventable physical illnesses. If that is the essence of what the United States is about, then wealth should not be the means to health, but universal good health should be the means to wealth. Health is a social value, not a business expense. If we in the United States are going to counterbalance the combination of powerful special interest groups from the for-profit medical community and debunk the free market ideology that has dominated the resistance to national health insurance, it will be up to big business to make the case that national health is a social value, and it is neither a private responsibility nor an appropriate business expense given the economic realities of the postmodern era. A losing argument in the United States dispute with Canada over softwood import tariffs was that Canadian producers did not have to bear the cost of health insurance as did U.S. producers. In a similar vein, U.S. automakers have blamed soaring health care costs for adding $1,500 to the price of a GM car. In the larger context of economic globalization, U.S. corporations have been breaking their pledge to their workers for what Time magazine called the American Dream. Specifically, Time magazine wrote,
"For your decades of toil, you will be assured of retirement benefits like a pension and health care. Now, more companies are walking away from that promise, leaving millions of Americans at risk of an impoverished retirement."
Time magazine called this the Great Retirement Ripoff, how corporations are picking people's pockets with the help of Congress. This economic fallout has become one of the realities of globalization. Rather than provide corporate bailouts, Congress and big business need to join forces with the American worker to support universal health care through a national insurance program like the rest of the developed world. As Thomas Friedman noted in The World is Flat, health care and retirement benefits need to be portable and universal in order for U.S. corporations to compete in a global economy. Companies can no longer do this. Health is a national infrastructure. National health insurance is a win-win situation for both the individual and the nation. We fall short of this ideal because lobbyists, through the wealth of investment, have used their power to defeat health care as a national social responsibility. The power of balance is to restore general health over profit from health as a social value. Health money should buy health, not create investment wealth. The health industry is an oxymoron. Simply put, health care should join the family of inequalities that we accept every day as part of the American way. As a national value, we accept some inequalities between people that are seen as the just rewards and incentives to those with the brains, initiative, and hard work that also allows them to drive more expensive cars, eat better food, and drink more expensive wine. The very rich will never be faced with a difficult, subjective choice of having to sacrifice some other goal in order to have basic health coverage or access to treatment for rare illnesses or elective procedures. However, once universal basic health care is assured for all, additional private insurance for high-end medical expense is within the reach of many people because the probability for the need is so small. Some people will choose to forego other goals in order to have this additional assurance of health coverage. Some will not. However, this is a far better approximation of a fair and just society than the current situation discussed previously, in which all but a few of the very rich must either compromise their health security or their quality of life. In conclusion, the concept of world citizenship means accepting civic responsibility for the well-being of the whole, as well as for each component, whether that component is the nation or an individual. It is an understanding that the whole is more than the sum of its parts. In the context of our national health care system, it is an understanding that viability of the total health care system is a civic commitment by everyone to each other for the benefit of all. The health care crisis in the United States has resulted from an imbalance of power, where the powerful health lobby has protected profits and benefits for a few at the expense of the overall health of the nation. The power of balance is to restore a more equitable distribution of both the liabilities and the benefits, both financially and socially in terms of the national level of health, between the consumers and the providers. Health is, after all, the application of knowledge as a national resource and belongs in the public domain as a contribution to human progress. It is, above all, not primarily a commodity for financial gain.